You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
To start off with, what is the new carbon calculation method?
So carbon calculation has been around for a little while. The new part of that process is actually how it plugs into the software that architects already use. So a lot of architects design and document their buildings using this type of software called BIM, or Building Information Modeling. This is where we build a completely digital twin for the building. And what that does is it gives us a huge amount of information about the building at the design stage. And so we can talk a little bit around the design with the client and use those things for 3D renders and walkthroughs, all that stuff. But it also enables us to assign materials to each part of the building and assign data to each of those materials. So how the carbon calculation now works is that we have a plugin for that software that has a huge database of the carbon values associated with each material. And the software does a great job in calculating how much of that material is in the project, and as a result, how much carbon is in it. And from there, then we can make decisions around how we use different materials, how much of a material we want to use, how much of a material we have to use, and then tune the design to try and bring the amount of carbon in the project down. And this is not just only around the design of the building itself, but also about how the building operates through its life.
So what can the carbon calculation technologies be used for, and how does it get calculated?
So the data that's collected around each material is supplied to a larger database, and then you can select each material in the software and apply it to the material in your model. And then we can run through options. So the biggest one that we see as an easy win is to try and reduce the amount of concrete and steel in our project. And that's something that in our practice we do a lot of, trying to use timber, not only because it is a kind of wonderful material for builders on site, but also because it has a much lower environmental impact than concrete and steel. And it is a kind of an easy change to make. So the classic example is going from a concrete slab through to timber pile foundations. And that reduces a huge amount of the carbon in a project. And it has a tangible difference to how much impact the house has, or any building, to the wider environment.
What causes the greatest amount of waste during a construction project?
So the greatest amount of waste is still in bad design. So I think the most sustainable thing that you can do is think about what you're going to build very deeply before you start. And so working with architects who approach their designs in a thoughtful way really does have the biggest impact on your climate footprint. And that's kind of for two reasons, because during the design, we can really tune how a building is put together and how it's designed to minimize waste on site, so things that go into the skip. But also, if you design something well, people will love it and they will maintain it and they will continue to use it. Things that are poorly designed, people don't love, and then they get demolished, and that is a huge amount of carbon, a huge amount of waste, and a huge amount of wasted effort. And we really can't afford to work in that way anymore.
I wasn't expecting you to say that the worst carbon emission is bad design. You know, that's quite...
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, if you think about the amount of carbon that goes into building any sort of building, if you demolish that in 5 or 10 or even 25 years, you have to build another thing again, right? And all of that effort, all of the material that you put into that building is wasted. But it's not only the material, right? It's every truck that comes to deliver the material to site. It's all of the energy that's poorly used within the lifespan of the building. All of that stuff is just completely wasted. And that, to us, is a totally unsustainable way of making architecture. So we try and spend a little bit of time at the start making sure that people actually love their buildings. They love the design. And that means that you're starting with a much longer horizon on maintenance for the building, but also potential for demolition and rebuilding.
Why has the idea of sustainability become more popular among high-end home developers?
I think there's two parts to that. I think there's necessity. I think we're in a world where climate change is no longer this thing that is debated within the culture. It is a fact, and we all have to be doing something there. And I think there's also, for a long time, there was this expectation that beautiful things couldn't be sustainable. And I think that goes back to a kind of modern aesthetic in architecture being a very kind of crisp and clean thing, and sustainability being kind of widely thought of as the kind of traditional or the kind of rustic idea of architecture, particularly in housing. And, you know, we always say that you don't have to wear the caftan to be able to do the beautiful thing. And it's really about trying to make sure that you can do something that is beautiful and that you connect with and that you love, but you do it in a way which is a really high-performance building that uses energy really well, uses materials really well, and all those things can happen at the same time.
Is it possible to achieve a carbon sink environment where there is more absorption of carbon than emission? And what steps would need to be taken to implement this?
So there are a couple of steps that need to be taken for that to become a reality in a wide sense. There are a few ways that you could get there. I think a lot of buildings at the moment that are pushing towards this net zero or carbon positive outcome do that by reducing the amount of carbon in the design of the building and the operation of the building, trying to use renewable energy through its lifespan, those sorts of things, and then using offsets. And there are many different ways of offsetting, and not all of them are created equal. And I think that's incredibly important to understand, that a monocultural pine forest is not the same as a diverse native forest with all of its biodiversity and huge amount of kind of benefit to the wider ecology. So if you are going to go through that offsetting process, as we do with many of our projects, you have to be very careful about where you offset and know the forest, know the people who are planting, how the protection's happening, is there river restoration and biodiversity and education happening at the same time. So that's one strategy, that you reduce the carbon and then you offset what is left over. The other thing that's on the horizon is actually more materials that absorb carbon during their production. And so you're using materials that are essentially pulling carbon out of the atmosphere in their production, and then the building has an opportunity to be a net positive in itself. There is some technology coming to things, particularly around concrete, to help with that. And there are already some suppliers of concrete who are making different mixtures of concrete to reduce the amount of carbon in them. You know, when we do use concrete in foundations and things like that, we always specify a type of concrete that has 40% less carbon than standard concrete, just by the way it's mixed, the materials that go in. And there's more of that stuff happening. So technology is helping, but we can't wait for that. And I think the real kind of pressing demand is that we figure out other ways of reducing the carbon in the build by just more design thought.
What is the next step for this technology, and how could it be better implemented into building techniques and architecture?
I think the next stage is really wider scale adoption. So at the moment, there are a few commercial practices that use carbon calculation in the design of big civic buildings. There are, to my mind, next to none in the residential sector that do this. I think apart from my own practice, there's probably maybe two or three nationally that are involved in this sort of thing. And I think that's just far too few. We have the technology now to be able to calculate with much more transparency and much more accuracy the impact of our buildings, and as a result, be able to tune that impact down to its absolute minimum. So for me, I think the biggest thing that needs to happen is people need to adopt the technology that's already there. And that's partly about education of existing practitioners, but also education of the wider public, that they can demand that in their projects. And for us, we see that as it costs nothing extra for the end consumer, because all we're doing is applying a bit more thought. And at the end of the day, it often ends up providing a net saving in the construction because of the ways that we can accurately tune the way that the building operates. So I'll give you an example. If we design a building without much thought, you would have a building that cost a lot more over its lifespan to run. So it would take more energy to heat it. You would lose a lot of that heat through poor insulation or thermal bridging, all these sorts of technical things. If we design that project better from the start, the building's cheaper to run through its life. And so you can get to a point where you actually can reduce the cost to the owner by better design. And that, I think, is enticing to everyone. You're doing something better for the environment. It's cheaper for the occupant. It's more healthy for them to live in. We feel great about designing that sort of stuff, everyone's a winner.
Is there anything that you are working on at the moment?
Oh, we're working on a whole range of houses around the country, lots of them heading towards this carbon positive goal that we have. And I think the kind of critical thing in all of those projects is that they're fun and they're sustainable and they have that kind of design excellence that people want, but they're getting there in a way which is really positive for the wider environment and for the people who live in them. So we're really excited about all of that sort of stuff at the moment.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.